This podcast is designed to help you understand the laws of our land. I am your host, Hattie Savari, and here to help you every step of the way, whether you are a tenant, landlord, parent, child, employee, employer, neighbour or business owner, and we are all most certainly consumers. The law is in your life every single day with over 180 episodes and 5 million downloads. Get ready to listen and empower yourself with tons of jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. Hello and welcome to our podcast at Get Legally Speaking. Our legal conversation today will be on finances in divorce. I am joined by barrister and judge Rachel Goodall from Three Paper Buildings Chambers in London. Rachel specialises in family and financial remedy matters, and she is one of the few barristers who is consistently recommended in both of the leading legal directories, Chambers and Partners and the Legal 500. Rachel also sits as a deputy district judge in the civil courts, and she is authorised to hear private children's cases. Thank you so much for joining me today, Rachel.
It's my pleasure, Hattie.
It is absolutely my pleasure to have you back on a podcast. I love it. Love it, love it, love it. Rachel is one of my favourite barristers because she is incredibly hardworking and incredibly knowledgeable. So today we're going to talk about finances in divorce. And I was just saying to you, wasn't I, that I'm really pleased we're doing this podcast as a standalone, because one of the things that I found, and I have found over the years, is that when people come and apply, say, I need to get a divorce, they don't understand that the divorce element and the financial element of the marriage are two separate things. So let's talk about what we mean, first of all, when we say financial remedies. What do we mean by financial remedies, Rachel?
Well, Hattie, it's a wide range of financial provision that the court can order. And that's once you've got divorced, or if you have a civil partnership, once that's been dissolved. And what that means is orders for things like sale of a property, transfer of a property, spousal maintenance, pension sharing orders, and that sort of thing. So it's all the financial arrangements that follow from your divorce or dissolution.
Yeah, so all the finances in the marriage, and we're talking about assets and liabilities as well.
Correct.
It's how are they going to be divvied up between the two parties that are getting divorced?
That's right.
Excellent. Okay, so people may ask, why do I need a financial order, a court order for dealing with the financial remedies? Why can't I just manage this with my ex and we both agree and go our own ways? And I know I'm going to have a big opinion on this in a minute, but obviously let's talk about the legalities on that first.
It's a really good question, Hattie. You don't have to have a financial remedies order, and many people don't. They get divorced and they will go their own separate ways and they will sort the finances out between themselves. But let me just give the listeners a word of warning. There was a case in the Supreme Court in 2015, and the wife in that case, 20 years after they divorced, brought a claim for financial remedies. Now, during the marriage, they had lived pretty much hand to mouth. They had a caravan. They didn't have any money. And then by the time 20 years later, she brought her claim, the husband in that case had amassed wealth of over £100 million.
Excellent.
And so she said, knock, knock on the court door, I'd quite like some money now. And what the court said, and I'll just read it out because I think it's really, really well worth everyone who is thinking, I've got divorced, why should I have to pay a lawyer? Why should I have to sort my finances out? The Supreme Court said this: given the lifelong obligations which attend a marriage, there can be no strict limitation periods on bringing a claim for financial relief. It's always open to either party to bring a claim, no matter how long it has been since the party separated. So obviously, if you leave it years and years, it may be that the court takes that into account and you get less. And I won't go into all the case law on it. But as I say, 20 years in that case. And actually what happened in the end is that the husband had to pay the wife, and I call them those names, they'd been divorced for 20 years. But he had to pay her by agreement in the end, after it had gone to the top court in the land, £300,000 for her to buy a house.
Well,
so if you don't want to get a financial order, it's up to you. But you may have some years later your ex saying, I'd quite like some money now, please.
Well, that's really interesting. And I think one of the key points of this podcast that people really need to understand is your divorce might be final. You may have your decree absolute. So you may no longer be married to that person. You may have moved on and married somebody else. You may be living with somebody else. If you do not have a financial order from the court that says your finances have been agreed and this is what's been agreed, then anybody can go, any party, the husband can go back to the wife if the wife may be well off in the future or doesn't have to be well off. He might think, well, actually, I'd like to get a financial order now because I'm not doing so well as you are in life. Either party can go back to each other and say, I want to have a financial remedy and I want to have this from you now. And that case that you've just quoted is extraordinary because you're talking 20 years after a separation and a divorce.
Yes.
So you can't get a bigger alarm bell than that, really, that to say to somebody, it is absolutely okay for you to agree it amongst yourselves. It doesn't mean you have to go to court and fight it out. However, if you do agree it amongst yourselves, go and for goodness sakes and at least get something what's called a consent order drawn up, which is sent to the court to say, we're not coming to court to fight this out. We have agreed amongst ourselves. Here is a consent order and I highly recommend that a lawyer draws your consent order, writes it up so it's all done properly. Sends it to the court, the court seals it, gives it to both of you, and then neither party can be exposed ever again to a further financial remedy, court hearing, application or any otherwise.
Absolutely. That's very good advice, which I would endorse, Hattie.
You know, that's got to be right. So, okay, let's talk about if somebody wants to make an order for financial remedy, what application do they make? What does the process look like? Now, should we sort of mention what that would look like in the consent order terms? It's pretty straightforward. I've mentioned a bit there. Or if actually there's problems, they just can't agree. One party is not agreeing with the other. They want to settle it so they can move on. What can people do, Rachel?
Well, starting with the positives, Hattie, if parties have agreed, then all they need to do is file an application for what's called dismissal purposes. So it would be an application in Form A, which is very straightforward to fill out. And then with that would be the proposed consent order, which I would suggest you don't go to an online outfit. You go to a barrister direct access or a solicitor to draw it up. It shouldn't cost too much if there's broad agreement. There may have to be some financial disclosure. So, you know, you show the other party what you've got and vice versa. And then you have to do what's called a statement of information, just setting out what capital, what liabilities and what pensions you've got and how much you earn. And then the court won't just rubber stamp it. The court has to make sure it's fair. So the court will look at what the assets and liabilities are and then look at the order and then approve that if it's fair. So that's all done as a paperwork exercise and it's all going online as well very shortly. If you haven't agreed and you don't yet have a consent order, then I should say that it's, and I know you've done a podcast on mediation and we've spoken about it before, but you should try and mediate.
Yes.
And try and reach some sort of agreement. If you can't, then it's still the same Form A application, but then the court will list a number of hearings, which will then trigger financial disclosure in what's called Form E. So Form A is the application and Form E is where you set out all your assets, liabilities, etc. And then the court will, as I say, determine what happens at the hearings.
The Form E, is it still the longest court document that exists, Rachel? Because from my knowledge, I think it was. It's still a good solid 28 pages or so, isn't it?
Yes, but then it has lots of boxes where you put in what your assets are and liabilities are, so nothing's missed. So yes, it is very long, but it's a worthwhile document because it makes sure that everything that should be disclosed is disclosed. And you can obviously ask questions of your ex in terms of their Form E, and they can ask questions of you. And then the judge at the end of the process will decide who has what. What's the fair division of all of the assets, liabilities, pensions,
and
what
everything
should
else in the pot
of anything. So it may warrant a separate podcast on the court process in terms of financial remedies if you don't agree. But very simply, you make your application, you tell the court on the other side what you've got, and then the court will decide who gets what.
Yes. I mean, I have to say, I would strongly suggest that if you are going to court to fight it out, that you have legal representation, because over the years of representing and working for families, go, you know, couples going through a divorce, the one thing I've seen more than ever is that is assets being concealed, being sold off and things like that. And, you know, when this for most people, this is the first time around sort of process where you haven't been through a divorce before. You don't know what it's like to divide assets and liabilities. You don't know what you're entitled to or not entitled to. Your husband or your wife might be concealing assets or might be telling you, you can't include that in the pot because I owned that before I married you. But, you know, if you've gone through a long marriage, then everything goes into the pot and until there's a reason for it, a justifiable reason as to why it shouldn't go into the pot. I mean, the good news is, as we started this question with a bit of good news, is that The Guardian last year reported that divorces in 2019, of which there was 90,871, is the lowest number since 1971.
Wow.
So that's
the
good
news. I
didn't
know that statistic.
Yeah, and the Office of National Statistics apparently reported that, and The Guardian picked it up, and I've swooped it off The Guardian, and there you go, reeled it off today. But I think, you know, there's so much, isn't there, Rachel, to consider when you're talking about going to court to try and resolve the finances of the marriage. And I think you're absolutely right. It does warrant another podcast, because if we go on to discuss the process of a disputed and unargued financial remedy, so, you know, who should get what and why, I think there's so many finer points that I've certainly seen over the years that people just naturally don't think about. Okay, so let's talk about spousal maintenance and child maintenance, and then there's global maintenance. Can we just mention and talk about what are the difference between spousal maintenance, child maintenance, and also global maintenance? What can we say about that, Rachel?
Well, spousal maintenance is, in terms of what it says, it's maintenance for a spouse, so for a husband or a wife who's not able to meet their income needs. And what I mean by that is it's not sharing what, say you have a wife who's earning double what the husband's earning, and the husband says, well, that's not fair, I need some money. The court won't simply just divvy up and share the maintenance. It will be based on what that other spouse needs. So in that particular case, the husband might have a mortgage to pay and bills, and there might be school fees that are payable, all sorts of other outgoings. And the court will assess what that particular spouse needs and then look to the other spouse to say, well, can they afford to pay it? So it's money for that spouse. Child maintenance is seen very separately. And that will be purely based on what the non-resident parent is earning. And it will take into account the number of nights that the child is staying with that non-resident parent. The Child Maintenance Service has a fantastic website and a calculator that you just put your gross, the paying parent's gross income in, and it will work it out.
That's very helpful to know, isn't it?
So it's very, very handy for people who are either the resident parent and going to be receiving the child maintenance, or indeed the paying parent who doesn't live with the child, to put it in. I should just say that if there is an exact 50-50 shared care arrangement, no matter what the one parent might be earning, they might be a millionaire and the other might be on benefits, there's no child maintenance payable if it's exactly 50-50.
That's interesting. And we're talking about 50-50 residency. So if the child or
Correct.
Children spend 50% of the time with you and 50% of the time with the other parent, if the other parent, and we're talking about sleeping and staying in that form,
yes.
spending the nights, all the childcare, everything else, then the other parent, as you rightly said, be it they're a millionaire and you may be on benefits, you cannot claim child maintenance on the basis that they are sharing equally the responsibilities and what the cost, because if you're looking after the children 50% of the time, you have to still clothe and feed and look after those children. Very interesting.
Exactly. There are other orders perhaps you can apply to the court for, but just focusing on spousal and child maintenance. Child maintenance is purely based on what that non-resident parent or what the paying parent is earning. If they have children living with them, that reduces it. The more nights they have with the child staying with them reduces it. So rather than go into it all, have a look at the Child Maintenance Service website and get the calculation and try to agree it. If not, you go to the Child Maintenance Service
Can I just mention something global. There, Rachel? Sorry, yes, Rachel. I just want to say something about child maintenance, because this has been one of the banes in my career, in any case. With child maintenance, so you get a nice child maintenance order in the court. Why is it that it only stands for 12 months?
Hattie, we need to record a podcast on child maintenance. I feel it coming on.
Oh, my good God. You know, tell me, Rachel, I mean, why is it that after 12 months, the order... Yeah. Give it to me in a short, sharp way, because honest to God, this drives me nuts.
Because in 1991, the Child Support Act was passed. It was Margaret Thatcher's baby, if I can call it that. The Child Support Agency back then was set up because she, before then, the court had jurisdiction to make child maintenance orders. And Margaret Thatcher and the government at the time thought, this isn't working. So we're going to set up the Child Support Agency, and they are going to make these, as she termed them at the time, these fathers, as they often were, pay the money. So it's the court doesn't have jurisdiction, the court doesn't have the power to make child maintenance orders unless the parents agree. And then they only last for 12 months, because after 12 months, you can go to the Child Maintenance Service. The Child Maintenance Service is a new name for the CSA.
I was just going to say.
It's the same outfit, they've just changed their name.
But isn't it right that the Child Maintenance Service, I'm going to refer to them as a CMS instead of the CSA.
Yes.
Isn't it right to say that they say that price per child is £20 or £30 a week? They don't. Do they actually go into the income where the income can be proved, of course, of the paying parent and say, right, OK, we're going to take a slice of that? Or is it just that they say it's £20 or £30 per child per week, which doesn't get you nowhere?
You might be confusing that with child benefit, which is £20.30 a week per child. But the Child Maintenance Service will base it on the paying parent's income and can take other matters into account. And it may be, and there are appeals that you can make from Child Maintenance Service decisions, which goes to a tribunal. I'm not sure whether £20 or £30 is that what you're saying they say a child needs to live on.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing, because I've heard this a few times from people saying they've been onto the website for the CMS and it says £20 or £30 per week, and we know that the other parent is earning a substantial sum of money. But I know child benefit is child benefit, I get that. But, I mean, it's very difficult to go through the CMS, I think, Rachel, particularly when the other person is not declaring their income, the paying person. They're not actually... What happens... And I think if I'm right in saying this, if they don't want to give the CMS their details of earnings, then the CMS can't actually take legal action, can they? They don't actually take legal action on the paying parent. I don't think they do.
Well, you can, as the receiving parent, if you feel that the other that you can try and prove it on like lifestyle and spending. So you can go through a process with the CMS where you can challenge their decision. But if you've been married, you can go for spousal maintenance. You can also make an application under Schedule 1 of the Children Act. I mean, I think actually child maintenance is very involved, and it probably does warrant a separate podcast on explaining that in a bit more detail.
Yes.
Because quite frankly, the Child Maintenance Service is set up because the courts really shouldn't be dealing with child maintenance unless there are particular circumstances. And that is that the paying parent lives abroad, or there's perhaps a disability of a child which needs to be taken into account, or they earn over £156,000 gross a year, the court then can get involved.
Right.
But you need to take legal advice. I urge everyone not to do a back of an envelope calculation, to get proper advice on whether the CMS are approaching it the right way, whether they can go to the court, what their options are, should they get spousal, should they get child, and to just... I don't think I did cover it. Global orders.
Yes.
Is an order for spousal plus child all in the same order.
Right, right.
So that would be something a court could order that would cover, as I say, the totality of those orders, that the court would then have the power to change if circumstances
It just doesn't, you know, something just doesn't ring right to me that a court order comes out and you think, that's it, you're set up. Particularly as some of these court orders, because I've seen them for child maintenance, says, right, until the youngest child is 16 or completes their full-time education, you will pay this amount of child maintenance to, usually, it's the mother. The father will pay to the mother, usually. And say that's 5 years ahead. But then they roll out of court and 12 months later, the person that the order was made to pay for, let's use the father in this instance, decides not to pay, and the mother has to look for legal fees again to go to, back to court to try and get them to pay the child maintenance. Or, you know, the CMS have come back and said, well, they're not disclosing all their income and there's nothing we can do. But you're right, I think there needs to be a separate podcast on that.
That's why everyone should get advice, because you should know when you reach an agreement that child maintenance, the order can only last for 12 months. And the person who's receiving it should be well aware that after that time, they should be told by their lawyers, after that time, either of them can go to the CMS to get it changed.
Yes, yes, no, indeed. Let's talk about a clean break, because this is a very interesting point, I think. Let's explain what is meant by a clean break in a financial remedy case, please, Rachel.
A clean break, put simply, is just having no financial ties with the other spouse or civil partner, or ex, obviously, in either case. So that could be a clean break completely, so no spousal maintenance, and no ties, so there's no ownership of properties together, one spouse doesn't have a charge on the other's property, it's completely clean and they don't have any financial ties. That wouldn't include child maintenance, because you can have a clean break on everything in your finances, but there's a statutory duty to pay child maintenance.
Right, right.
So that's still, you can't clean break child maintenance. It's okay. Payable for a child until they reach 19 or finish full-time education. So that is, as I say, that can't be avoided. But you could have a clean break in terms of capital. So you just say, right, well, I'm going to have the house, or, you know, we're going to sell the house and I'll have X amount, or you pay me a lump sum and I don't want any maintenance. That would be a capital clean break.
Yeah.
In terms of selling the house and divvying it up and having a lump sum. And then I said, but in terms of maintenance, that would be an income clean break if you didn't want any maintenance from the other person.
Yes, yes.
If you have a pension sharing order, that is a clean break, because say the other spouse has got a bigger pension pot and you have a slice of it, you would have your own pension pot from that. So the best way of looking at it is saying, do you want to have financial ties with your ex? If you don't, try and look for a clean break, because you might say, well, I don't really want them to pay me maintenance. Your case that you said the husband stopped paying maintenance and she needs to think about going back to court.
Yes.
If there was enough money in the pot, say there was money in a property or there were savings, she could have said, well, I'll just have X amount in terms of a lump sum and I won't have any maintenance and we'll have a clean break that way. A bird in the hand sort of issue.
I have to say, from a number of cases that I've seen over the years, I always suggest a clean break is looked upon favourably, more so over any maintenance order, because life circumstances change. And particularly when a man is paying a woman in that case, because that's usually the way round that maintenance orders are made. And the woman moves on to into another relationship, or the man doesn't like the way the woman's living her life or raising the children or whatever it is. His income goes up and goes down. It affects that maintenance order straight away. Whereas with a clean break, if you can go for a clean break and you can say, do you know what? I'll just take a little bit more upfront now, or however much more, 60-40, 70-30, whatever it needs to be, obviously very bespoke to your financial position, then that's got to be right. Why would you want to financially be tied to the person that you're divorcing and that you're leaving and be waiting for them to give you money so you can put food on your table and so that you can get on with your life, and then you can't sell your property because they said, well, until I finish paying the mortgage, you know, no one can sell the property or remortgage the property. I always say, think about a clean break seriously. Take more upfront if you can, because honest to God, as life goes on and circumstances change, it becomes a bane of your life to have that maintenance order in place. So let's talk about the difference between a clean break in life and a clean break in death. is there a difference between that? Because we hear that term, and some people do wonder, what does that mean?
Well, a clean break in life would just be like the capital clean break or the income clean break that I've talked about. So try to have all the money up front so you're not reliant on one another as matters go forward. A clean break in death would just mean that, say, you have your husband and wife and they've got divorced, and then the husband were to die, the wife could claim on the husband's estate even after the divorce. So that would be an Inheritance Act claim that the wife would bring in those circumstances to say, well, actually, the husband's died and I need some money. They've left behind X amount. But if you do a clean break in death, it means that whatever happens, if you die, you can obviously make your will knowing that the money is not going to go to your ex. It's going to go to the beneficiaries you choose. So it's very important to consider there won't be a clean break in death whilst there's still spousal maintenance ongoing.
I was just going to say that because, you know, you think, well, why would I have a claim on his estate or her estate if, you know, we've divorced, we've had our financial remedy order made in court? Because if there is a spousal maintenance or a child maintenance order in place and then that person dies, you're left high and dry. So you would want to make a application on the estate to try and get whatever it is you can to make up for what you were going to get financially.
Exactly.
Or obviously, if the state has it in the estate. And what I will say on the wills and divorce very quickly, Rachel, is if from the moment you decided you're going to go through a divorce and a divorce petition is issued, make a will. Make a will, because if one of you, God forbid, die during a divorce process where you have not got a financial remedy order from the court, automatically your spouse is entitled.
Well, until decree absolute, you're still married.
Yes, as well. Still married until decree absolute. And even if you get the absolute, like we were saying earlier, if you haven't had your financial remedy and your finances dealt with, then they still can come back and say...
They can.
Yep, I'll scoop the lot, because we had a case like that. And the grieving widow got a lot of money. And it was very interesting. But there you go. That's all we've got time for, Rachel. Time flies when you're smirking at each other over Zoom and having fun.
There's a lot to cover, Hattie. It's a huge topic. And what I would say to the listeners out there, if there are any particular questions on aspects of financial remedies, then I'm always happy to record more and answer any questions on this very big area. It's important people get the right advice and think about what the rest of their lives will entail in terms of wanting it all sorted.
Absolutely. So I will say, email us your questions at getlegallyspeaking.com, and we'll certainly put questions over to Rachel for anybody that has specific questions. I mean, I think, you know, you're absolutely on the money. People need to take some form of advice on the finances of a marriage, unless it's so straightforward. There's one house, there's one car or whatever it is, but make sure you get it sealed by way of a consent order by the court, because you leave that door open and it is always up for that other person that you think, well, I've divorced and they're gone, to come back and go for more. Rachel,
absolutely.
Thank you so much for your time today. It is absolute pleasure to record with you again.
Thank you, Hattie.
And I'm going to take you up on that extra podcast about child maintenance. I think we need one on child maintenance, one on spousal maintenance on its own. We can definitely discuss a clean break in a little bit more detail, I think, and definitely one on the for me, because I'd like to talk about voluntary for me's versus the sworn for me and the differences there and why they're so important. So there you go.
We'll be busy.
My shopping list has been made. And what I'll say to our listeners is, don't forget to click and subscribe to our podcast. And you can find us on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn and YouTube by searching Get Legally Speaking. Also visit our website at getlegallyspeaking.com. Thank you very much for listening.